Good morning, everyone. In my mind, I'm coming back to you right out of Spiritual Renewal Week, though I'm aware Asha gave Sunday service here last week, which was also at the end of Spiritual Renewal Week, but I stayed up there and came home later. So I'm coming to you filled with everything that happened there, everything so many of us felt and learned, and the inspiration is still flowing, though I do wish this was last Monday morning and not a week later. Last week at the Sunday service that Jyotish and Devi gave, because the subject at the end of Spiritual Renewal Week was, does Satan exist? They stood up and they said, we have to admit we thought about changing the reading. Somehow didn't fit, but they made it fit. And I have to admit that no matter what the reading was today, I was going to talk about spiritual renewal. But it turns out that it's actually quite perfect to have a reading on how we face our trials. And as Swamiji says, it's not will we have trials, it's not if we have trials, but how will we face those trials? Because, of course, they'll come. This morning at the beginning of our purification, Kabir was giving a little talk about what purification he is. And he said, the path to self-realization is a real journey. He said it just like that. And then he said, of course, we all know it's filled with blessings, but it also occasionally, he said, being very gentle, has some challenges. And I had to giggle because I bet I'm not the only one who feels that they come more than occasionally. The week last week was based on the book Autobiography of a Yogi. So every topic, every morning, the speakers were speaking about or to some aspect of the autobiography. And it just dawns on me that maybe some of you here have no idea what Spiritual Renewal Week is, but it's a week of the year, always in August, so you can plan for next year. Next year it's later in August, but we'll get those dates to you, where literally people come from all over the world. Some of them have been involved with Ananda for a very long time. Some of them are brand new to Ananda, and they come looking to be spiritually renewed. And I don't know how many years now SRW, as we affectionately call it, has been going on, but I know that I've been going for a long time, and in the last 16 years have not missed a year, and I've never been disappointed. So it's a week that's dedicated in a very focused and specific way to being spiritually uplifting and renewing. And every morning of the week, there's a panel of speakers, and there's always a topic for the year. And this year, as I said, it was Autobiography of a Yogi, which is the great spiritual classic that was written by our guru, Paramahansa Yogananda. And I think Jyotish said this in his opening talk on Monday, but if he didn't, he has. And that is that there are so many extraordinary things about Autobiography of a Yogi, but it is not simply a book to be read. As he said, it's a book to be lived. It's a spiritual roadmap for us. It's a book that tells us how to meet our spiritual trials. It really couldn't have been more perfect that this reading happened right after that. And it speaks to each of us very personally, because many of us have said, and we're not joking, though at times people use it humorfully, that every time we read autobiography or we read a part of autobiography, even one chapter, we find something new in it. Everybody who reads the book has that experience. I've heard dozens of people say it, and I know they're always speaking for all of us. It's not because the book has been changed, even edition after edition. It's because we change. So it's the perfect spiritual roadmap, because no matter how many times we read it, we're going to find a way to deal with our trials, a new way. We'll find something new because we have become more receptive since we read it last time. We've become more deeply attuned, where we've learned some lessons. And that would have to be true for those of us who are reading it more than once. Otherwise, why would we go back? But we're looking for the wisdom in that book. So the whole week was based on autobiography. Again, the perfect instrument to show us how to face these trials. Next thing that happened during the week, did I blow the mic? It's okay. All right. We've been electronically challenged in these last few weeks, to say the least, so we're never quite sure what's going to happen here. The next thing that happened is that Joe Tisch, very brilliantly, first before SRW at a Sevika retreat, and then in his first talk at SRW, and by the way, you can listen to all of these talks if you weren't following along last week. They will soon be up on the internet at ananda.org. They're actually already up online with Ananda. But one way or another, you can listen. But Joe Tisch set this the stage for the week. He really helped everybody, all of us who were listening, all of those who were speaking, dive deeper into an awareness of our path and what's led us up to this moment where we are right now on this path, and how to energetically and joyfully become engaged by speaking about three waves. And he spoke about the first wave, starting with Babaji, who is the highest master up there, calling Lahiri Mahashaya into the Himalaya. Many of you know this, and there's a beautiful chapter in autobiography just dedicated to this, and giving him the teaching of Kriya Yoga and telling him to start spreading that teaching. And in a very beautiful paragraph there, at the very end, Babaji initiates Lahiri Mahashaya, next in our line of gurus, into the practice of Kriya Yoga, a meditation technique. And he says to him, I want you to only take this technique to those who are willing to renounce all other aspects of life and simply practice Kriya. And Lahiri says to Babaji, this avatar, this great ever-living avatar, please let me give it to people who are genuinely seeking. Maybe they're not ready yet to renounce the world completely. Maybe, I would say, like probably many of us in this room, Lahiri spoke for us, and he said, let me give it to people who are genuinely looking for God, though not yet ready to announce everything else in their world. And Babaji said to him very sweetly, through you, a divine wish has been spoken. And he said, give this technique to anyone who you feel is genuine, genuinely looking. And that is how this great teaching of Kriya Yoga came back out into the world, and what Joe Tisch referred to as the first wave. The second wave happened when Paramahansa Yogananda brought these teachings to the West. And of course, all of these great yogis were in cahoots about all of this. So it wasn't just happenstance. But Sri Yukteswar expressed great desire, a story that is also told that I won't repeat in autobiography, in a great interest in the West. And Babaji came to him in that moment and said, I will send somebody to you who will be able to take these teachings to the West. And eventually Paramahansa Yogananda went to him as his disciple. And then in his early 20s, and I'm aware we all know this, but it just gives us the feeling for how predetermined all of this was, for what great good karma it was for all of us to be born, to reincarnate right when we did, as this great plan has been being put put into play for centuries, probably forever, whatever that means, for more lifetimes than we can imagine. And here we are, we show up just exactly as Paramahansa Yogananda comes to the West with these teachings. So now, Kriya Yoga has come to the United States, and sometime later, on July 31st, 1949, interestingly, I spoke about this in the last sermon I gave on July 31st, Paramahansa Yogananda is speaking at a garden party in Beverly Hills, and he makes that great pronouncement. Today marks the beginning of a new era, he says. My words will be registered in the ether, in the spirit of God, and they will change the West. What an extraordinary statement. And of course, Swami Kriyananda was in the audience. And of everybody there, Swamiji heard that, and he heard what Yogananda said, that this would happen through the creation of small communities where people lived simply but in a high-minded way. And he said the youths of the West will go north, south, east, and west and create these communities. Well, it turns out that the youths are us. We were younger at one time, that's true, but even now, it's us. And this is what Jyotish was saying. We are all part of this third wave. We all found our way onto this path with Swami Kriyananda, who brought this third wave out into the world, and who became then the next essence. I don't want to say the essence, because of course Yogananda and autobiography is what Spiritual Renewal Week was about, but I want to say to everybody that Swami Kriyananda was as present at Spiritual Renewal Week as if he had been alive and well in his body and speaking to us through every speaker, singing to us through every song, meditating with us. I thought a lot about this there and as I've come home because, you know, of course, I'm aware that this is a path based on the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda. And I'm aware that there are people who occasionally run into a little trouble about the fact that we all speak as much about Swamiji and that how much he's taught us and that he is this path to us. So I just sort of want to put that out on the table. But I was thinking to myself just this morning, nobody has to claim Swamiji as being their teacher. Nobody has to claim him in any way on their spiritual path. What everybody can recognize, learn from, expand with, open their hearts to, is that this man came into this life and did everything that is humanly impossible. You can call him what you want, you can hold him where you want, but what do we mean? We say these things a lot. I say them a lot. What does it mean that somebody wrote 150 books, that somebody wrote 400 pieces of music? You know, when Ananta spoke at Spiritual Renewal Week, I have no idea how much of this was planned, but I know it was inspired. One could not do this, even if they memorized a talk. His talk should have been called Philosophy and Song, which is actually the title of the CD that Swamiji did, because his entire talk was presented through the words of Swami Kriyananda's music. Every line of his music holds a spiritual lesson that we could meditate on and contemplate for the rest of many lives, and we would still be learning. The inspiration that came through that man to all of us is beyond extraordinary. It's been life-changing for everybody. He brought this third wave. I said to myself, and this is only me speaking, there's no fact here, I didn't check this out with anybody, but it seems to me that if Ananda is not the biggest organized way of spreading teachings around the world that raises consciousness, that brings, as we say now all the time, this peace and harmony prayer, that opens hearts, that allows people to feel uplifted and hopeful about life. If we're not the biggest, we're quite close. It's extraordinary what's happening through Ananda. And here we are, every one of us, with that amazing blessing in our lives, riding the energy of that wave. There is no accident about this. You know, I just had this amazing, the privilege of teaching this death and dying class in July. And I've said to many, over all the years I've been teaching, it was my favorite class that I've ever taught, all based on the teachings of Yogananda that I've come to understand through Swami Kriyananda and then through all the people who grew up with him and who explained these teachings to us. Because I realized I wouldn't know anything if it wasn't for all those people. I just walked onto this path, and everybody showed me a new way to live. And I had the privilege of sharing a little bit of that in this death and dying class. And I am still getting emails from people about that class saying never would they have ever been able to think about death, dying, karma, reincarnation in any of those ways if they had not taken the class. The people who have been in mourning for decades are writing and saying, my pain is gone. People who were still harboring so much anger at a parent who left 18 years ago write and say, my heart is filled with love for him, and now I feel closer to him, the parent who died, than ever. You could just go on and on about what we know and what we don't know. This morning I thought to myself, if it wasn't for Swamiji, for Master coming and then Swamiji, would I have ever understood the whole resurrection? I just don't know where I would be. It's an amazing blessing, no matter what name we give him, that we were able to come, that this man came and was such an example of calmness, of all of these manifestations of divine love and energy. I've told you this before. I once was sitting across from him at a dinner. I don't remember why he said it, but he said to me, everybody there, but looking right at me, clearly sending me a message, I must have said something. He said, oh, that's interesting. He said, I don't think I've ever been anxious. And I thought to myself, He's never been anxious. That's sort of my starting point for everything. And then he said, yeah, as I think about it, I've never been anxious. A true personification of calmness. I heard Davy tell this, and if I'm getting the dates wrong, it's close. 1976, there was this fire at Ananda Village. We've all heard a lot about it. I mean, we've heard about it many times. But everything was lost. They had been building this community for 7 years. Within hours, everything was lost. Swamiji was apparently away on vacation, but he came right home when he heard. And Davy tells a story about the meetings that he called and how calm he was and how that changed the way the whole community dealt with it. But she said, it wasn't that long after that. I don't know if it was weeks or if it was months. It doesn't matter. Clearly the rebuilding was still going on. But he came up with this idea of traveling around the country, giving a series of talks. He said, let's do a nationwide tour, and the topic will be joy. And we will spread joy. We will teach joy. That was the birth of what affectionately became known as the joy tours, right alongside of this fire, because he personified joy, because he knew that he had to raise everybody's energy to that place. Otherwise, people could get a little upset, they could get a little frightened, they could be questioning. Here was this huge fire that just took away everything they did. A remarkable man came here, no matter what title we give him. And we, as I said, are all blessed to be here. We all know this takes enormous, enormous courage to face these trials, to try and live based on these teachings. I heard a wonderful story just the other day from somebody from our church who came to see me. They have a young daughter. She's 7. And she was in a school last year, and she didn't want to go back to the school. She was very clear she did not want to be in that school. So the school, at the end of the year, hands out a paper that the children are supposed to bring home to the parents. And the paper says, will your child be returning next year? She sits right down at her desk or wherever she did it. She checks the box, no, and she hands the paper back in. She's 7. She turned the paper in. Her parents hear about this paper later. Honey, where's the paper? Oh, no, I told them I wasn't coming back. So the school wants to hear from the parents. She sort of said what Sister Gianna Monta said about Master. She says to her parents, tell them and make it quick. I'm not going back there. That's the spirit that it takes to face our trials. That's the courage. That's the commitment. That unquestioning sense of yes. Swamiji put Master's statement in this reading. I think for the first 10 years that I taught here, I used to say it's in every class, in every sermon. A room can be in darkness for thousands of years, but the instant you turn on a light, the darkness disappears. What does that mean? That is the light that we were learning about at Spiritual Renewal Week. All those lights. It comes in so many ways. It comes, interestingly, in our reading today, our affirmation on alertness. Here's the thing. There are always two currents of energy pulling us. There's the positive, expansive energy. There's the negative, contractive energy. It's always there. The biggest temptation, as we read about the temptations of Christ, the biggest temptation is to be drawn towards the negative. That's what we know. That's what habit is. It's to be more contractive, not upward and expansive, which takes energy. Oh, I turned in that paper already, Mom and Dad. I told them, absolutely no. It takes a lot of energy and courage. Easier to be tempted into the negative side. We need to learn how to increase our receptivities to these teachings so that these masters can channel them through us. Ananda Moy Ma says, we need to learn to remember. This is very hard because this is just the concept that God is the doer. We are the tools that he uses. We need to become ever increasingly purer channels of that light and love. Because as soon as we truly grasp that he's the doer and we're the channels, she goes on to say, all fear and doubt leave us. What an amazing, amazing promise. Doing that, remembering that, is turning on the lights. We say, let's start listening to more of Swamiji's music. Let's listen line by line. Choose a favorite song, a favorite hymn. Play it all the time. In every down moment that you have, don't switch on the television. Don't automatically pick up the phone and call a friend to schmooze. Play that song. Play that chant. Turn on a video from Ananda online. Keep filling yourself with these teachings. That's what it means to turn on the light. Learn to be somebody who is solution-oriented. Ask yourself all the time, am I becoming part of the problem by being tempted by negativity? Am I walking around the world seeing what's wrong? Or am I holding everybody at their highest potential, their highest octave, and seeing what is right and good and whole and rich about them, and reflecting that back to them? Who am I being? How am I taking these teachings in? That's what all last week was about. That's why it was so extraordinary hearing Swamiji there. You know, I took a friend to Spiritual Renewal Week with me, and many of you have heard me talk about it. It's almost impossible to not. He had, like probably many, like I feel happened to me, a truly transforming experience there. His life will never be the same. That's it. I had taken him up to Ananda in January, and he went to a newcomer's weekend. I took him up to do that. He had watched our movie, Finding Happiness, once before he went, and he couldn't wait to see the village. And we get up there in January, and honestly, I've been going to the village since 1978. I have never seen it look more dismal, more depressing. It rained every day. It was cold. Nothing was in bloom. Nobody was out. And I'm standing there, I'm saying, okay, God, he's in your hands, not mine. And God bless him, he found a lot of things to love. But he said, I'm coming back for Spiritual Renewal Week. I promised him it would be sunny, things would be blooming. He came back for the whole week, and he wrote to me that all he did on the plane during SRW, he bought Finding Happiness, bought it for his computer. All he did the whole ride home is he watched Finding Happiness over and over. He said he cried the whole way home. So I watched Finding Happiness again. And, you know, at the very end of the movie, Juliet, who's the reporter who has come out to do this journal article, this newspaper article on Ananda. That's the premise of the movie. If you haven't seen the movie, please do. But she comes up to Swami Kriyananda, and she says, Swamiji, I've learned so much here. I've learned, my life has really been changed. What advice can you give me, she says, for taking this home? How can I take it back and live with it? She's going back to New York City. And you have to see these perfect opening shots of New York, but you're still at the end of the movie, left with what she's going back to. And he looks at her. The answer totally surprised me at first. He says to her, stay in touch. And it took me a long time to realize that he meant stay in touch inwardly. He didn't mean give me a call now and then. He meant do what you can do to stay in touch. And I'll end, I'm aware that I'm over a little bit here, by telling you there's a story in Autobiography of a Yogi, Two Penniless Boys in Vrindavan, many of us know. But at one point, there's a young man who comes up to Paramahansa Yogananda. He's there to really prove to his friend Jitendra and his brother God's presence everywhere. And of course, that happens in this chapter. But at one point, this man comes up to him and says, "Sir, please let me take you around through the day. Let me feed you." And Master says, "No." He's not making it easy for anybody to give him what his brother Ananda had challenged him to do. And the man just looks at him stricken. And he says, "You're not going to send me away, are you?" He said, "You're my guru. I've been looking for you. I've seen you in visions over years." And of course, Master doesn't turn him away, and the story goes on. But many years later, Swami Kriyananda said to Master, "Did that man, Pratap was his name, did you ever see him?" And Master looked at him and said, "He stayed in touch inwardly." It's so beautiful. That's our lesson. Whatever it is we need to do, stay in touch. That's how we face our trials. There is no other way. Nothing else that you do will work. So even repeatedly, we're about to say in a few minutes, we lost everything we had over and over and over. Only this practice of this inward religion in all these ways that we've talked about. May we all be blessed to become ever increasingly pure channels of this light by these great masters who help us remember how to face these trials by looking up into the light, by turning the light on, by calling to God over and over, no matter what. God, God, God. Just repeat those simple words. That should be our prayer. Help us to remember to turn our attention to you. Bless you all.